For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Andy crawled to freedom through 500 yards of shit-smelling foulness I can't even imagine. Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, the man who invented the mesh tank top. It's summer season, ladies. My brother, Mike.
You know, I saw a tank top, the shirt with for male least amount of clothing, and said, you know what? We need to make that thing breezier. Put some holes in it.
I want to see someone's nipples just popping out of one of those things. That's what Mike was thinking. I just want to see like one little nipple here, one little nipple there. We're good to go, you know? And so he was just very happy to get mesh onto a tank top. And now as a result, he's swimming in medium amounts of dough. And so you see that background. Look at there. Look at that house he's living in. It's gorgeous.
It also got me the creative director position here because I'm a thinker. I'm an ideas man.
It's the best house you can find in Greenwood, Missouri, really. Fantastic. On this week's episode, we'll break down a rough week for the Kansas City Royals. They faced some tough opponents. They did not fare very well. We'll discuss a few players who may or may not help with the playoff push. And we're talking about guys on the Major League roster there. And then we'll preview this week's games. But first, make sure you like, subscribe, give us thumbs up, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. All those sorts of things. It helps us a ton when you go out there and do those. It generates a lot of buzz about the episodes. I love going back and forth with people on YouTube, in Substack. Make sure you're subscribed to the Substack. $5 a month gets you a prospect profile a week from Mike, which didn't come out this week, but will come out on Tuesday. You get two this week. An extra episode. You get a weekly post from me. I talked about MJ Melendez in this most recent one and the softer schedule coming up. It was really great stuff. There's a lot of good stuff happening on that Substack. Make sure you subscribe, royalsweekly.substack.com. But just give us the likes and the thumbs up everywhere you see us, okay? Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the others are being played. When the game's over, head over to their online casino and get on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of their 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts there. We'll start a review of last week with some roster news because we actually have some this week to talk about. It's kind of a wild week for the Royals roster news. They did a lot of shuffling of players to account for some injuries, but also just some weird stuff happening, and a trade took place of a guy many Royals fans are big fans of. We'll talk about the most important things here. Mike, to start it off, let's talk about Hunter Renfro. He went on the 10-day IL. As a result, Drew Waters was brought up to fill his spot. What are your thoughts on losing Renfro and bringing Waters up to the Major League roster?
Yeah, Renfro was just starting to hit a bit and really helping the team produce at the bottom of the lineup, so that kind of sucks when he's right in the middle of what you feel like is a hot streak or possibly the progression of him getting to the place we thought he could be when we signed him as a free agent, or hoped he could be, maybe is the better word there. But when he's hot, he's valuable, you know? So that made him valuable during that time, and then bam, he gets cut down. Now, if you watch that broadcast, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that before, where a guy literally fouls a ball off the top of his foot or toe in the exact same spot in the same at bat. And so they mentioned it on the broadcast, and he was limping around pretty good. Initial reports were a broken toe, but now it's, what are they calling it, a bone bruise now? Now with a stress reaction or whatever. So hopefully that'll be quick. He'll get back, and hopefully he's where he is when he left off, which is always really hard to do coming off the IL. I'm not a huge believer that Drew Waters is going to make up for a lot of that value, but he helped him win a game against the Yankees. I know that. So I'll take that, I guess. But I expect once he's ready to go for Waters to head back down.
Oh, yeah. I think that's definitely the case. My best way of thinking about the Hunter Renfro injury is, you know, those cartoons where somebody accidentally hits their toe with a hammer and then the toe starts going dun, 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 and like gets big and red. That's what I imagine Hunter Renfro was doing after the game. It took off his shoe and was going.
He is Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, he's that basically. Yeah, exactly. And so I'm a doctor. Okay. I know what I'm talking about. So, yeah, I think you're right on all counts there. Renfro was hot there for a second. And like you and I had said, you know, that's probably mostly positive regression. I don't know that that's any significant growth on his part as a hitter, but they hired him to essentially hit for power against pitchers who didn't throw very hard. And he wasn't doing that for most of the season, but he was doing that for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And that was really helping them, you know, find some a longer lineup and be more offensively productive. He goes out. Now Waters is up and he hasn't shown us much of anything different than what he actually was. You know, he will hopefully provide some more outfield value and some more base running value and that sort of stuff. But I think it's telling that they haven't treated Drew Waters as a true replacement for Hunter Renfro. He's not playing every day right now. A lot of Blanco out there and that sort of thing, which is, I think, the smart thing to do. But, you know, it's one of those things that I just don't – the Royals are going to have to sort of gut out until Renfro gets back, and then they'll have that little bit of value he had offensively back if he can hit the ground running again and get back to hitting the way he was when he left. We'll see if that ends up being the case. I don't think Hunter Renfro was like all of a sudden like an offensive stalwart or some sort of cornerstone of your lineup, but he was a rotational piece that was actually starting to do something for you offensively. They kind of need that back. They can't afford to lose even a rotational piece offensively with how inconsistent their offense has been. Speaking of offensive inconsistency, the Royals traded a guy who at AAA at least has not been inconsistent in any way offensively, and that was Logan Porter. They traded him for cash to the San Francisco Giants. It's either cash or a player to be named later, so it'll sort of be determined by the two teams in the future. Mike, what are your thoughts on the Royals shipping out a guy who was a very productive AAA hitter and a catcher in Logan Porter? I will say this, that I'm pretty sure he had an opt-out and was going to trigger it. I saw that reporting from Aaron Rodgers. And so really they had no choice but to trade him. What are your thoughts on the idea of him moving to San Francisco and what they got for him?
Good for Logan Porter. It didn't ever seem like he was going to get a chance in the Royals organization, mostly because his profile does not fit what they look for in catcher. They are always going to be looking for a defensive first or a quality defensive catcher. And it's not that Logan Porter is a bad catcher necessarily, but he's not close to a Freddie Fermin or a Salvador Perez or even some of the other guys they have in the minors right now. And so it looked like he was always going to go for a team who opts more for an offensive catcher as a backup catcher. And so hopefully the San Francisco Giants, he gets an opportunity there. That's a great story for a kid who kind of grew up around the Royals organization, came through their minor league system, and never has really gotten the sustained shot in Major League Baseball. Go to San Francisco, get you an opportunity to show what you can do with the bat, Logan Porter, and I hope he does very well. You root for guys like Logan Porter.
Yeah, I'll be rooting for him every time I see him. Hopefully I want him to go, you know, 4-for-12 in a series against the Royals and for the Giants to lose every single game. You know, like that sounds like a great series against the Giants because Logan Porter seems like a very good story, seems like a very good dude, has done a lot for the Royals organization, done everything they've asked of him, including filling in a little bit last year at the major league level. And he was, you know, a league average hitter during that time and in his first taste and looked good at the plate, looked competent and that sort of thing, looked competent behind the plate. And so I think Logan Porter could be a very good backup catcher for somebody in the league and maybe even have a couple seasons where you're like, he probably could have been a starter. He probably could have, you know, I don't think he'll ever be an all-star in the league because I don't think he hits the ball hard enough to be like truly impactful with the bat in that way, or so good defensively that he stands out as like, wow, this guy is amazing defensively. I think he's just going to be around a league average catcher, but hey, that's pretty damn good and pretty damn valuable at the most important position. It's tough to find quality catching in Major League Baseball, and I think Logan Porter has a chance to be a quality catcher in Major League Baseball. And so hopefully the Giants give him that opportunity. They have a good young catcher there. I can't remember his name because my brain is mush, but they have a pretty good young catcher who is their starter there. Hopefully he gets a chance to be his backup for a while, show that he can do some things, and then maybe he ends up with another chance elsewhere to be a starting catcher in Major League Baseball. It would not surprise me if that ended up happening, if he goes like a Brian Pena route from the Royals organization.
That, if you remember him. Makes a lot of actually wouldn't great, surprise me if he does. Great profile comparison too. Peña was never a guy that was going to hit a ton of power. He was a lefty, but wasn't ever going to hit for a ton of power. But made really good, solid contact pretty consistently, and was about an average catcher. And he got at least a couple of years starting with the Tigers, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yeah
great comparison.
Yeah, I think that would not surprise me if he ends up with that kind of career, and so or a Manny Pena career, something like that.
Yeah.
Other than that, the Royals just did a lot of like pitching shuffling, guys up and down, and that sort of thing. Daniel Lynch came up for a couple starts to fill in for Michael Wacha. He was sent down this week. Who else? Anthony Viziano was up for 2 days and then sent down again. Adam Frazier went on the bereavement list and off the bereavement list. There was a lot of like just shuffling people around to fill spots. No significant changes to the rotation or the bullpen as far as we know. I would expect Lynch. Actually, they're going to skip Lynch. They've already announced they're going to skip that fifth starter spot, that Michael Wacha spot, because they have a day off tomorrow, and just roll with a regular five-man rotation. You know what I'm saying? They're just going to go right into
their top four.
Yeah, yeah, right into – well, actually, it'll be Marsh and then Cole Reagans. So it'll be their fifth starter in Marsh and then right back to the top with Cole Reagans in that A series. On the field this week, it was harsh for the Royals. They had a harsh week. They played two of the best teams in baseball in the Yankees and Dodgers, and their record reflects it for this week. They went 2-5, bringing their overall record to 41-32, which is good for second place in the AL Central, five back of the Cleveland Guardians, and the Twins are a nipping at their heels. They took a few absolute beatdowns at the hands of the Yankees, a couple of games that kind of gave me, they triggered me, I would say. It gave me very 2023 Royals vibes. But you know, they haven't done a lot of that this year, but they did a couple of those against the Yankees. And so came back, got a win in that last game of the Yankee series, and then got one win from this Dodger series. Mike, are you crushed after such a tough week for the Royals?
I'm really not, because if you watched those games and you provide that context, I think you come out looking like, hey, the Royals aren't as good as the Yankees or the Dodgers, but they're not that much worse than the Yankees and the Dodgers. Their bullpen is worse than both of those teams. If you look at that Yankees series, they really only got killed in two games. One of which is the game you had an opener and Daniel Lynch going because Michael Wacha was hurt. And so the other one was the Brady Singer start. The rest of those, they were in those games and won one of them. The other two games in that series, they won one in the ninth, and then the one before that, they lost by, I think, a run, so or two runs. It wasn't a whole bunch. And so, and I think in that Yankees game, that freakiest game, it was the bullpen again. The bullpen is just killing them, which was the story again in this Dodgers series as well. In that first game, they have that game won, and the bullpen gives it up. So, with the context, I think what you're seeing is, it's a team that's not quite ready to compete with the highest echelon because that bullpen holds them back and the inconsistency on offense turns them back. But there were some great things to see there. That Marsh start in the Yankees game, what kind of confidence builder should that be for that young man? I mean, you just killed one of the best lineups in baseball. You struck out Aaron Judge three times. I mean, that was a fantastic game for that team. I was at it with Mom. There was some stuff to hold on to and a good win against the Dodgers yesterday. So, you know, that was stuff to hold on to there.
I'm pretty sure the last game Mom and I went to, Alec Marsh started. We only go watch Alec Marsh pitch, apparently.
Yeah, she said that. She's like, I think he's the guy we saw last time. Yeah,
he is the guy we saw last time. He is our favorite Royals starting pitcher because he has come on the show. He is a friend of the show. And so he gets to be number one in our eyes. Anyway, yeah, I was actually hoping that they would do more in this series, honestly. Even if they had gone 3-4, I'd be happier than 2-5 because, yeah, you're saying the reasons that they are worse than the Yankees and Dodgers, but those reasons are real. Like they don't have a good enough bullpen to compete with teams like that. They don't have a consistent enough lineup to compete with teams like that. And right now they're missing a key starter. And anytime you have that, it's going to be tough. But you know what? The Dodgers are missing a lot of key starters. You know, Yamamoto went down in the game that they were playing in. That's how they got their win, basically. And then, you know, the Yankees are missing. Everybody's got injuries and stuff. And so I was hoping for a little bit more. I was hoping that we would see them find a way to sort of go even through the tough stretch against the Yankees and Dodgers or close to it and then come out looking real good for the soft stretch that they have coming up. That didn't happen. It doesn't crush them, and it doesn't like end their playoff chances or anything like that. But it would have been nice to, see them at least put up a little bit more, especially at that Singer start against the Yankees where he gets crushed. That was tough to deal with. Mm-hmm. You know, Lynch, I mean, I know Lynch isn't great, but I was hoping that an opener could somehow soften the blow. That didn't happen. Or I was hoping maybe their offense could put up like a big day against the Yankees somewhere. That didn't happen. And so it's like, ugh, that's tough. You know, like I want at least 3 wins from that, those 7 games. And they end up coming up just a little bit short.
Do you think when you looked at the beginning of that Yankee series and saw the pitching matchups, did you not go, oh boy, this is going to be tough though?
I did. I didn't realize what the pitching matchups would be before that Yankee series. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be tough because Lynch, Marsh, Singer, that's not what you want to go with against the Yankees. I thought they'd do better in the Lugo start. I thought they'd win the Lugo start and then maybe they might get lose the next 3. But I at least thought, okay, if they win the Lugo start, they're definitely going to lose the Lynch start. Maybe they get a 50-50 chance in each of the Singer and Marsh starts. They can grab a split, maybe. I was kind of hoping for. And then, of course, Singer comes out and shits the bed. They lose the Lugo start. Marsh has to scrounge 1 win for him. You know, it wasn't looking great. It didn't look great throughout most of that series. And it wasn't just the pitching, right? The offense didn't look great either. And, you know, it just, there were too many mistakes. And so hopefully they can clean that up. Hopefully they can find some more bullpen solutions. And if they do make the playoffs, they're a little bit more competitive in those series that they're going to face really good teams, because they're going to be facing really good teams come playoff time. Mike, there were some strong performers. It was a tough week, but there were some strong performers to choose from. Who did you go with as your standout this week?
I went with old Freddie Fermin. We're talking about Logan Porter and catching. Freddie Fermin is one of the reasons that Logan Porter didn't play more Major League Baseball with the Royals. He was 5-for-18 with a double, a home run, 2 RBIs, 2 walks to 2 strikeouts in a week where Salvador Perez tweaked his knee a little bit and couldn't really catch. They asked Freddie Fermin to do a lot, and he delivered. He seems to always deliver when you need him to. You know you're getting the solid defense, but I think the bat is legit, and I think we are very lucky to have Freddie Fermin.
We are. What did he do? He finished catching that game Friday night, caught the game Saturday, and then came out and caught the day game on Sunday. And so that dude put in some work this weekend, at the very least.
And it was hot in Kansas City when he was catching there, I can tell you that.
You mean for the Yankees? I'm sure it was decently hot in L.A. But, the dude who's just super reliable, comes through, takes good plate appearances. The catching is always good. Great framer of the baseball. Really good catch and throw guy. I mean, you just cannot ask for more from a backup catcher. You can't ask for more from a starting catcher, honestly. Like, and so, yeah, love having Freddie Fermin. This is like a Freddie Fermin stan account right here.
I know. We've been calling his name for 2 years, like, we love you, Freddie. Freddie.
We're big Freddie people over here. My strong performer for this week is also a friend of the show. We're big fans of his, and that's Alec Marsh. We just talked about him.
Alec Marsh.
Friend of the show. just a close personal friend, Alec Marsh. He had a huge week this week, and even though he only made 1 start, they desperately, desperately needed an amazing outing from a starting pitcher in that final Yankees game, and he came out and delivered. 7 innings pitched, 1 hit, 1 hit baseball he threw for 7 innings, 0 runs, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. He was masterful in that outing, as Alec Marsh can be, with a huge pitch mix and decent velocity. He often looks like he can spin a gem like this. They needed him to do one against the Yankees, and he did. And that was hugely valuable. Got them one of their 2 wins this week. They needed it so badly, and it was great to see him come out with the pressure on him and deliver. I went ahead and looked up some of his season numbers. The improvement from last year is amazing. It's just remarkable. His ERA is like almost a run and a half lower, or almost 2 runs lower than it was last year. His expected ERA is almost a run and a half lower than it was last year. He's just doing so many incredible things. His walk rate is in the 66th percentile or something like that. Really, really good. He's grown so much as a pitcher, learning how to lean into this huge 5-pitch mix. And it's working for him so well, finding what he should be throwing, that he's getting more confident, putting more strikes in the zone, and you're seeing the tremendous results. He might be, I don't mean not the best, but he's definitely one of the best 5 starters in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and have you seen where the catcher, it's usually Freddie, I think, is lining up or is setting up for him, especially when he's throwing breaking pitches? Mm-mm. It's like right down the middle a lot of the time. It's because when you have that variety of breaking stuff and the hitter doesn't know what's coming, you can really emphasize, let's throw strikes with this thing. So sometimes they're setting up right in the middle of the plate, throw it there, and it's going to, there's no way they know where it's going. And so, and really the effectiveness of the fastball this year too has been unbelievable. So, could not be more proud of Alec Marsh and that, that development there. And we may talk about this a little bit later, but it really gets me excited for if the Royals do make the playoffs, he's the kind of guy who can have a very interesting role in a playoff pitching staff, because you generally don't use all your starters, but Alec Marsh might be a better reliever.
Might you know? What would be interesting to me is what they would do with the decision of do we keep Singer in the rotation or do we keep March in
That's
the
That's exactly rotation? What I was thinking about when because, I was thinking of this today.
Because Singer's one of those guys who, when he's facing those good lineups, he could just put you out of the game immediately almost, right? Like you could just be out that day because his stuff is not going to be good enough. His command's not going to be good enough. Now, we saw him today calling his own pitches, and I'll credit Josh Kaiser for noticing this. He messaged both of us on Twitter and was like, is Singer calling his own pitches? I've never seen him do that before. And he, as a result, he ended up throwing almost 30% non-sinkers and sliders today. And that seemed to really work really well against this Dodgers lineup. He did give up 3 home runs, but all were solo home runs. And I think he ended up with a quality start. And so it'll be interesting to see what that looks like moving forward. But I think Marsh or Singer, which one stays in the rotation if they get into the playoffs, is actually a legit question.
Did you notice Marsh was calling his own on Thursday too?
I did. And I noticed that. I was like, okay, interesting.
I watched it and noticed today or yesterday.
Speaking of Brady Singer, Mike, you have some weak performers to talk about, or we both do. I think this is a good transition into yours.
Yes, Brady Singer is my weak performer for the week. We saw him pitch in 2 outings. We mentioned kind of both of them so far already, but 11.2 innings pitched, 6.94 ERA for Brady Singer this week, 12 hits, 9 earned runs, 4 home runs, 3 of them coming today, the solo shots to 3 extremely good baseball players. Or no, sorry, 2, because Ohtani had 2. Mm-hmm. 3 walks to 10 strikeouts. I'm very interested now in what pitching mix is going to look like with him calling those games. If he continues to do that, I'll be very interested in that, because that Yankees game was a tough one to watch because he was getting blasted all over the place. It wasn't like, hey, here's your one problem, Brady Singer. It was like, nope, Singer, you're not locating your slider. Singer, you're not throwing anything but your sinker and your slider. Singer, you're not, they're not fooled by your sinker at all. They're timing it perfectly. It's like, all right, this is bad.
Yeah, watching the game today, even though, you know, he did pitch fairly well today, it becomes clear that when teams load up lineups with lefties and he tries to throw that slider, if it doesn't get inside enough, it's exactly a home run. It is a home run every single time. Unless you're facing a Nicky Lopez up there, if you throw a slider and it doesn't get inside enough on a guy like Freddie Freeman or on a guy like Shohei Ohtani, it is going to be put in the stands because lefties love
Freddie Freeman. But yes.
Yes. Or Freddie Freeman. I think Freddie Freeman
maybe
could take one
he'd
out.
He probably put it out too.
Let him hit left-handed and I'm betting he's taking it out. Okay. That's all I'm saying. But what I'm saying is you face a left-hander, they love that low pitch in the bottom of the strike zone. That's basically, that's not just spinning, but it's like, they love that downward movement. They love it sitting right there in the lower middle third, you know, just right there. They can tee off like it's like they're golfing, and they golf it right out of the ballpark. We've seen it. Ken Griffey Jr. hit probably 350 of his 500 home runs just doing this to people, right? Yeah. And so every time he does that, I'm like, oh, that's going to get hit out. Oh, there it goes. You know, and so, yeah, it's tough when he's not getting that slider in enough on those left-handers. My weak performer for the week didn't have to worry about throwing sliders because he's a hitter. That's Mikel Garcia. He went 5 for 29 this week with 1 double, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts. His OPS for the week was something like 450, which is not what you want to see from him. He only had the 1 extra base hit. All the rest were singles. Garcia just – this. I started thinking this as I was watching the game today. He was just taking hacks at balls he was not even close to against Tyler Glasnow. Tyler Glasnow just – wrung Mikel Garcia like a sponge, and it was just, it was terrible. And so this comes from my eye test from just seeing him take plate appearances where I'm like, what are you swinging at, Michael? You know you're a leadoff hitter, right? You know you're supposed to be getting on base. Why are you swinging at sliders 3 feet outside the strike zone? It looked very Salvador Perez-esque from Michael Garcia this last week, and that's not what he's supposed to be. And so hopefully he can get it going. They desperately need him to be offensively productive. He wasn't last week. Hopefully he picks it up again this week.
The one double did win them the Yankees game.
It did win them the Yankees game, and that was a huge hit. But also, they went 2-5 this week in part because he only had one extra base hit, and that was it. Mike, rough week. What was your theme for this week?
Oh, I went back to that classic film. Okay, I believe originally like a short story from Stephen King or something. Shawshank Redemption is the movie that I went back to. And after, at the end, there's like this montage where Red, Morgan Freeman's character Red, is explaining how Andy escaped. And he gives this line, and it made me think about the schedule that the Royals just had. Okay? And it's this. Andy crawled to freedom through 500 yards of shit-smelling foulness I can't even imagine. Or maybe I just don't want to.
How do you not do that in the Morgan Freeman voice? Oh, what, okay, you have no courage. You're a coward.
Retake.
Okay, retake.
Andy crawled through take two. Ready, go. Andy crawled to freedom through 500 yards of shit-smelling foulness I can't even imagine. Or maybe I just don't want to. Where's my Oscar?
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. I'll take that every day. That's lovely.
But no, they finally crawled through that shit smelling foulness, and we are into a not so scary part of this. So I'm expecting the boys to come out and break out and have fun this next week.
Yeah, and they need to, honestly. Like, they have some ground to make up at this point. They're 5 games back from the Guardians. The Twins are nipping at their heels for a wild card spot. They kind of need to make some hay while the sun shines here. That means getting some wins in these next 2 series especially, but then in the next few, I think the next month for them is a relatively easy schedule, and they need to get some wins out of that. My theme has like a similar flair to it, I guess. It's from the band. Mike and I are big fans of this 90s college band called Guster, and they have a song on one of their albums called Hang On, and it just goes, hang on, hang on. There's a twilight, a nighttime, and a dawn.
And that's, only that's like 6 octaves lower than what it's actually.
Yeah, I can't get up that high. And so, but the whole idea is like, yeah, it's like a song encouraging people to hang on. I mean, it is what it sounds like. And that's what the Royals have seemingly been doing as they've moved this tough stretch. They just had to hang in there, you know, while they were going to face these really, really good teams. And they'd have an opportunity to grab some more series wins and so on and so forth. They've now made it through. I think we're to the dawn at this point, and hopefully that means a lot of winning in the next few weeks. Royals Weekly is brought to you by Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Phoenix has all of our favorite things: year-round golf, year-round baseball, and Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Whether you want to buy your dream retirement home or just stay a while and catch spring training, Eric can help you find the perfect house. We've known him for 30 years and trust him far more than we even trust each other.
That time that you left me stranded in Beirut was particularly treacherous.
I told you, I thought we were in Scottsdale. I thought we were in Scottsdale. I thought you'd be fine. Eric does long-term rentals for the snowbird crowd and home sales and purchases for those who want to stay a while longer. Are you a baseball player or parent who needs a place in the Phoenix area? Eric will find you the perfect spot fast. You want to spend your day shanking golf balls into the great beyond? Eric knows the golf scene like Mike knows his way around the back alleys of Beirut. Find Eric online at ericoxer.com if you can figure out how to spell his name. It's ericoxier.com. Or just shoot him a text at 480-383-9745. That's 480-383-9745. Even if you're just curious about what he can do for you, he's 100% no pressure, one of the best people we know,
and he's as cute as a sleeping puppy.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
On this week's Spotlight segment, we're looking forward. The Royals are still in position to get a playoff spot, despite their recent struggles, and they're headed into a softer stretch of games against sub-500 teams. So, we're going to take a Spotlight segment to talk about a fairly simple question. Who's helping and who's hurting during this playoff push? We'll focus on five Royals, and we'll each answer whether we think they're going to end up helping the playoff push or hurting the playoff push. Now, this is not just about what they've done already. It's sort of about what we think that they'll do in the future. We're going to start with a fairly controversial figure, Garrett Hampson. Mike, Garrett Hampson. Helping or hurting?
Dang, man. I put this out on Threads a few nights ago, and I just put out there, has there ever been a Royal who makes me so angry so often, but then I also have to go, meh, yeah, he made some good plays there because he was playing a hell of a center field. I can't remember if it was last night or two nights ago now, but he was playing a really good center field. And I'm like, dang it. For as many times as you get picked off and you get, you know, caught off the base when you shouldn't be or do something stupid, take a bad angle to a ball, there's also whole games where I'm like, Garrett Hampson had a good game, you know? So it really kind of, he's the guy you want to hate sometimes, but you really can't. So I'm going to go begrudgingly with, he's helping us in a playoff push. And here's my somewhat solid evidence here. A 111 OPS plus so far this season for a utility player. Okay, for the fourth outfielder and fifth infielder or whatever it is. Yeah, that's pretty good. Defensive flexibility, he's got it. Speed off the bench, he's probably the second or third best base stealer on this team. Bobby Witt and Dairon Blanco would, you know, Dairon Blanco and him probably battling for the number two spot. And so those are a lot of tools that people use in playoff pushes, and Hampson has them. So I'm going to go with helping.
Hampson, not a terrible bunter either. And so yeah, you've seen him lay out down a couple of useful bunts. I'm saying helping too. And I'm not even begrudgingly saying it. I'm just saying helping.
It just makes me mad sometimes.
I think it makes you mad because our initial impression of Garrett Hampson or opinion on Garrett Hampson was, man, this is a bad sign, right? Like, because he was so bad for the first month and a half ish, you know? And so then he turned it around, which was great. It's great to see. But so he has been valuable since then. And we have to reevaluate and say, well, you know, it's good. It's a good thing that he's helping. Now, the 111 OPS plus, I think a lot of that is inflated. A lot of that is good batted ball outcomes that will probably come back to earth. But that's okay. He's doing the other things he's supposed to be doing. The defensive flexibility, the base running. Yes, he's made too many base running mistakes, but he is still good off the bench running the bases or just running the bases generally because he's so fast, right? And then he also is laying down bunts when he needs to and that sort of thing, and that helps out as well. And so you can't say that he's been anything but valuable as a 25th, 26th guy on the roster because he has been definitely valuable in that sense. In fact, they've probably had to lean on him a little bit more than they would have liked because of struggles from Kyle Isbell at times, a couple injuries here and there, some struggles from Melendez and the other corner outfielders. And so they've kind of probably needed to lean on him a little bit more than they wanted to. And yet he's still done enough to be offensively and defensively productive. It's all you can really ask for from a guy you paid $2 million in the offseason. Moving on to another guy who has struggled mightily. Mike, MJ Melendez, helping or hurting with a playoff push?
So I'm going to go with hurting. Sadly, I want MJ to be great. He's had some big moments. He's hit some big home runs like we saw yesterday. But, oh boy, the offensive ability has been so low. There is no evidence to tell me that he is going to help offensively, and he just doesn't provide enough value defensively or on the bases. Not that he's a bad base runner, but he doesn't add enough value there to make up for hitting 180-something or whatever it is. You know, that's just not going to be it. And I haven't been able to see, although I will say the last like three games have been a little bit better. He had a hit again today, but I haven't seen the evidence of he's fixed the big problem that we all know he has.
You want me to give you the evidence?
Oh, go ahead. Go away.
Okay. Because my answer is he's helping during a playoff push. And this is actually mostly based on the research I did about Melendez to write about him for our weekly Substack post that came out this morning. So make sure you're subscribed to that Substack. $5 a month gets you a weekly post, some updates, some prospect profiles for Mike, weekly episode, that sort of thing. But I looked up Melendez's performance against fastballs in the upper third in the last few weeks versus before that. He has actually gotten significantly better against pitches in the upper third in that time. Now you see them making swing changes for him, and there's been a ton of reporting about all the swing changes he's trying to go through. I think those swing changes are specifically designed to help him combat pitches in the upper third, because that's all guys throw him. I mean, look at the home run he hit the other day, the grand slam.
He had already missed a fastball up there.
He'd already missed a couple, right? Like, but he also fouled off. I mean, all he saw were pitches in the upper third. He saw 12 pitches. I think 10 of them were cutters in the upper third. Another one was a four-seamer in the upper third. That's all the guy wanted to throw him, because the book on Melendez is throw him fastballs in the upper third. And so he swung and missed at two of them. He also fouled off about eight of them. And so that's the thing. If Melendez can just get better outcomes against those types of pitches, he should be better. His whiff rate against those pitches has gone way down. His outcomes, his launch angle has become much better. You'll notice, if you paid enough attention, earlier in the year, if he got a fastball in the upper third and he actually made contact with it, it was just a harmless pop-up. An infield fly ball or a shallow outfield fly ball. Now, he's getting a little bit, he's lowering that launch angle a little bit and having some better outcomes on those pitches. Is he going to be great against those pitches? Probably not. But if they continue to work with him and he can continue to get some better outcomes against pitches in the upper third and gain a little confidence back, I think he's going to end up helping, honestly. Mike, another guy in the corner outfield who has not been stellar for them offensively, who they really, really need to come through if they're going to make this playoff push, Nelson Velasquez, helping or hurting?
I got him hurting as well, and it's for a similar reason to MJ. Without the offensive ability, there's just not a lot of value in a Nelson Velasquez, and I haven't seen a whole lot yet to turn that around. Now, I do like the approach seems to be a little bit better, and we'll see glimpses, flashes of him, you know, hitting power really well, either hitting, you know, high velocity really well, or flashes of him hitting breaking pitches really well. And if you remember, we talked about like the real difference here. We thought it might be, well, he's not hitting fastballs quite as much. It's really both. He's not hitting fastballs as much, but he's also still hitting breaking balls pretty poorly, except for in little small spurts. And so we need to see that consistency from Velasquez to think that he's going to be a helping kind of guy come playoff time.
I'm also going helping here. I know you went hurting, and I know I may seem overly
Mr.
optimistic.
Mr. Sunshine Pumper over here says, everybody love everybody, pumper. And we're all good at baseball.
Everybody love everybody. That's right. That is my motto, by the way. Everybody love everybody. But anyway, I think Nelson Velasquez is going to end up helping, because I think Nelson Velasquez is about to turn a corner. I just have confidence that he is going to progress, that this will all ultimately come together. Will he be like as hot as he was last year for the Royals? I doubt it. But I think ultimately he will be valuable as somebody who takes walks, who can have some power outcomes, who's a pretty good help offensively. I think he actually will end up being a net value positive towards their playoff push. It might be more rotational than we had imagined. It might be more picking and choosing his spots to be successful. But ultimately, I do think it will be positive for Nelson Velasquez come the playoff stretch. Here's a guy who got some play today and looked really good, but who has sort of been up and down. Mike, James MacArthur, is he helping or hurting the Royals during a playoff push?
I think he's helping. I really do. I still believe in James MacArthur. I think the role for him would need to change. I think it needs to change a little bit. Like we've talked a little bit about this. I think that comes with the acquiring of another kind of top end guy in the bullpen, which is a possibility come the trade deadline. I think that would help him tremendously. And then I also think they're in the middle of this, by the way. I think they're looking into the pitch mix a little bit, thinking he's not going to be the kind of guy who can lean as heavily on the slider as he has been in the past. One, because he doesn't locate it all that well, all that often. And two, because the two-seamer just seems to be playing a little bit better at times. And so I think they're really working to refine that, and then he needs to figure out how to locate his slider a little bit better. But I think James MacArthur is definitely a guy you can count on to perform and get guys out when playoff time comes and we need those games.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's helping as well, but I think it is in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, not in the ninth inning. Yeah. I think that they need somebody who is going to be a much more consistent force, a much more swing and miss force in the bullpen. They may not ultimately end up getting that guy, and it might have to be MacArthur who takes that. But if it is MacArthur, then I hope they're thinking more, let's go matchups. Forget the idea of a closer. Let's do our best matchup in this moment. Because I don't think MacArthur is that guy. He doesn't have the arsenal to be like, okay, we're definitely going to get swings and misses from MacArthur.
Yeah.
And so I want him to think more in terms of like, we're just going to work matchups out of our bullpen, and whoever ends up pitching in the ninth ends up pitching in the ninth. I think that would be more advised if they don't end up going out and getting a legit closer for their bullpen. We'll go with one other reliever here. And I want to talk about this guy in part because there are times when he looks a little frustrating as a reliever, but his numbers are really good. And that's Angel Zerpa. Mike, Angel Zerpa, is he helping or is he hurting?
I think he's helping. I just think, like you were talking about with MacArthur, we got to have the right spot for him. We got to have the right role for an Angel Zerpa. And I think it's as a multi-inning guy. And I think it's probably when your starter only gets through five, or, you know, doesn't get through five, and Zerpa picks up some, you know, an inning or takes up two innings, maybe a little more if they have to, but he can get a ground ball. And he's got a little bit of an increase in velocity on the fastball, which is, you know, helping him with the two-seamer. It seems to be getting even more ground balls. He's got a ground ball rate over slightly over 50% this year. Has shown the ability to get a strikeout on occasion, but I don't think he'll ever be a high strikeout guy. My big thing for him is if you're going to be in that role, you cannot walk people in Angel Zerpa. You need to be keeping guys off the bases, but I think he can definitely help in that role.
What's interesting about Zerpa is I think he's going to be helping as well. But what's interesting about him as a pitcher is he doesn't get a ton of swing and miss, which we can say about a lot of this bullpen. So when he gets beat, it's almost death by a thousand cuts. He'll just give up a bunch of singles that get through the infield, you know, because he does get a ton of those ground balls. No matter what, you can almost count on Angel Zerpa to get you a ground ball, right? And what's interesting is as his velocity has gone up this year, those higher velocity pitches that he throws, they're getting hit harder than he was previously, but they're also all getting hit to the ground.
They're all on the ground.
And so it's almost like that higher velocity is getting him more ground balls, but those ground balls are being hit harder. And so those ground balls are more likely to go through for hits than ground balls that are hit slower, right? And so, yes, occasionally Angel Zerpa will get beat by a whole bunch of singles that are just hit on the ground. That happens, right? Like, anytime you're a reliever who doesn't get swing and miss, that's sort of a threat to your game. But ultimately, in the type of role that you're imagining for him, and as I would call him, like, it would be ideal if Angel Zerpa was your second lefty out of the bullpen and you had a true lefty specialist in there, somebody who could get swing and miss from lefties. He's not that. In fact, he's probably their number one lefty specialist out of the bullpen right now. But if he could be the number two lefty specialist, and they were using him in ways where he's like, okay, you're going to go an inning, a third, or you're going to go two innings in a short outing from our starter, I think that would be a lot better. He'd probably have to fill a greater role, a high-profile role for this bullpen. But ultimately, I think it will be a net value, positive value as they make a playoff push. Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. You already know that All In Physical Therapy helped turn our mother into Thanos with follow-through. But what you don't know is that Mom loved her experience there because of the personal attention she got from Tommy and the staff at All In. They guarantee a personalized one-on-one experience to suit the needs of patients recovering from total joint surgeries. That's total joint surgeries, sports injuries, and any kind of injury or pain.
I had some Arby's earlier. I'm not sure All In has the fix for this kind of pain.
You and I were just talking about Arby's.
Big beefy chair. All In Physical
Therapy. Not good. All In Physical Therapy is owned and operated by Tommy Frevert with locations in Blue Springs and Lee Summit. Mike, where's the new one? They just opened a new
Belton,
one.
I think.
I need to reach out. Belton. I think it's in Belton. Mm-hmm. So they have a location going up in Belton right now, too. But most importantly, they're in network for nearly all insurance providers.
I hope my GI doctor's in network because she's got some work to do.
If you're a high school athlete recovering from injury or someone bouncing back with a brand new hip or knee, check out the best physical therapy in the KC Metro at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com. Or give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
After a much-needed day off in California on Monday, the Royals head north for a three-game series against the Oakland A's, followed by a three-gamer in Arlington against the defending World Series champion Texas Rangers. So they get a nice little day off in Los Angeles, I think, or maybe they head up to Oakland for the day off. They'll go to Disney World or something, or play some golf, you know, Pebble Beach or whatever. Mike, tell us a little bit about the Oakland A's, a team that started out decent and now looks just as bad as they were last
year. That's what I was just thinking. They turned into the team they were last year? 26-47, which is good enough for last in the AL West for the Oakland A's. I guess we're still calling them the Oakland A's. In that first game, we got a three gamer with them. In that first game, it'll be Alec Marsh versus Hogan Harris, a 27-year-old lefty out of University of Louisiana Lafayette. Don't have a huge book on him, 2.49 ERA and a 1.11 whip, but that's only in three starts. He's only got three starts this year. He throws a four-seamer at about 93 miles an hour, curveball, changeup, slider, cutter. The four-seamer is about 60% of the time, and he's a lefty, so but it's not extremely hard. It's not a hard-throwing fastball, so that's quite a bit of a fast. That's quite a bit of times to throw your fastball if you're not throwing it that hard. He's got a low batting average against on that pitch, but the expected batting average is over 300. So the Royals struggle with velocity, so sometimes...
Let's see if we can get to Hogan's heroes here.
And we'll see. That second game will be Cole Reagan's day versus Luis Medina, a 25-year-old righty out of Dominican Republic. 5.87 ERA and a 1.5 whip, so the numbers aren't good, but he only has three starts this year as well. Four-seam fastball and sinker, so four-seamer, two-seamer, 95 is the average for both of those pitches. A slider, curveball, changeup. The curve and change are getting hit pretty well, but some of his peripheral numbers are actually quite a bit better than the numbers that the raw numbers he's got, the ERA and the whip. So he's a sneaky guy to look out for there. The last game will be Lugo versus Mitch Spence, 26-year-old right-handed pitcher out of University of South Carolina, Aiken. Never heard of it. 3.95 ERA and a 1.21 whip. He's actually had a pretty solid year if you go look at some of his numbers. Interesting profile too for this pitcher. He is a soft throwing righty who is slider first. So he throws a slider more than any other pitch, 84 miles an hour. He has a cutter that goes with it at 91, and he throws those pitches about 80% of the time. But he's very soft with pretty much everything. He does throw a sinker a little bit harder, but he's definitely not a fastball first kind of guy. So that'll be an interesting game to see him go against Lugo. He's kind of a craftsman. Lugo's kind of a craftsman. Spence does get about 50% ground ball rate, so he's a ground ball style pitcher. So that Lugo versus Spence start, you might see quite a few ground balls.
Yes. What about their offense, Mike? Tell us about their offense. I did the research.
The guy does the research. Tell us about the offense. Well, they're 24th in weighted runs created plus at 93 in Major League Baseball. They're getting a decent year from Brent Rooker. Some people have talked about him as a maybe Royals reunion at the deadline. And J.J. Blade out of Vanderbilt, if I remember right. They get him out of Vandy? I think they did.
I don't know. I don't remember anything anymore.
But yeah, so their offense is a subpar.
Yes, it's not very good. After the Royals faced the A's, you know what I was going to do with that Luis Medina, but it was too late.
What?
I was going to make a joke about he was the fastest skater on the Mighty Ducks.
That's Luis Mendoza, I believe.
I know it is. I know it is. But it was so close. I was like, oh, wouldn't it be funny to make that joke? Anyway.
But he doesn't know how to stop. It's funny.
Yeah. Go watch it. If you've seen it, you know. It's a big movie. Anyway, after the A's, they go face the Rangers, who are 33-38, which is good for second in the AL West. The AL West is not a super strong division this year. But the Rangers are quite a ways behind Seattle in that division race. And so the Rangers have just been struggling all around, really. They are 23rd in Major League Baseball offensively with a 93 weighted runs created plus. They're getting good seasons from Corey Seager and Josh Smith, and then a decent season from Marcus Semien, but their lineup's not real deep right now. Not getting a lot of production outside of those top three or four guys. And then a lot of either mediocrity or really not doing well.
Some injuries too. Josh Young's hurt.
Injuries too. Josh Young's hurt. I want to say somebody else in their lineup is hurt as well.
Garcia? Adolis Garcia is here?
Yeah, I think it's Garcia. Okay. And so, yeah, they're just struggling up and down that lineup. And then the pitching staff has been pretty good, at least in the rotation. They've got a few good starters in that rotation, but a couple not so good starters. They're getting good seasons from John Gray, Michael Lorenzen, who they got in like last minute of free agency. I mean, like real late in the offseason. And then Nathan Eovaldi's having a good year too. But as a pitching staff as a whole, they're 17th in Major League Baseball with a 4.03 ERA because they have a few guys who are doing really, really bad. And so they're getting good seasons from a few guys and then really bad seasons. It's kind of a Jekyll Hyde story for the Rangers. They're probably looking for a little more consistency. Let's hope they don't find it against the Royals.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We'll end this week's episode like we end every episode with our Just a Bit Outside segment, where we talk about something that's caught our interest outside the world of baseball. Mike, it's been a week for us, or at least for me. I don't know about for you.
Yeah.
Tell us what you got up to this last week.
Well, one, I wanted to start with the old generic Happy Father's Day, okay, to all the dads
Happy
out
Father's
there.
Happy Father's Day, everyone. Happy Father's Day to Mike.
Happy Father's Day
Mike
to me.
Mike is a father.
Yeah, all the listeners, all you dads. Dads, single moms, all dad figures, we're saying. I texted our mom today, gave her the old Happy Father's Day. Mark and I are children of a single mother, and she was a great mom and a great dad when needed. And so, but I wanted to talk today about a special person. We went to the funeral of Roger Vest, the father of one of our closest friends, and it got me thinking when we were all remembering him that as a dad, you never know like what kind of impact you're going to have on your friends or your kids' friends, you know, or other people who are dad figures who are watching you be a dad, or, you know, the people, the unintended impact that you have. And Roger had so much of it that I got to thinking, well, you know, we were impacted by so many different fathers of our friends, you know, whether it's people we played sports with or went to school with, or usually in the size of town we were in, that was both. But you know, we saw four or five other ones at Roger's services that was like, you know, man, yeah, he was my baseball coach, or he was, you know, there that time I learned how to hunt, or, you know, I was out at the farm, or I was doing this and I was doing that. And so just remember that that's important. When you're parenting your kid, you're not just always parenting your child, you know, and that other dads are also watching the way that you handle your child, especially if they're like me and I only have one child and don't know what I'm doing. So, you know, you look for cues and stuff. And so shout out to Roger, a great dude, a wonderful dad. You know, I still use the way that he taught me how to putt when I was 18 years old. That's what I'm still using to this day. You know, he showed what it was to be a good dad and just a good human being. So shout out to Roger Vest.
Yeah, we will miss him very much. Mike and I attended his services on Saturday. One of those people who, no matter who you are, when you interact with him, you know that you're getting just a quality human being who, if you're listening and if you're open and you're sort of receptive, will probably teach you something that you can learn for the rest of your life. And so, you know, Mike and I are only better people for having known him. And that's true of a lot of the fathers of friends of ours. Like we didn't have what you would think of as a traditional father growing up. But we did get to see what it meant to be a good father from a lot of different people. And so that was great to see, including Roger. So we said goodbye to him this weekend, but you know, the impact will last far, far beyond his years on this earth. And so that's great to see. Speaking of that sort of thing, I'm talking about children as well, because I had an experience this last week that was very weird for me because I'm not around children very often. So this last week I got to teach a class at UMKC that was just for basically high school kids who would like a taste of the college experience. They take this week long thing called Rue Honors Academy at UMKC. And as part of that, they go attend a couple of classes, quote unquote, that are specifically designed for them that week. I taught one and you actually can listen to the fruits of that class. We came out with a special episode of Royals Weekly where I had those students record a podcast answering the question, you know, like, why is sports such a big part of our culture? And then we sort of talked about that. I thought it turned out really well.
It was very good.
If you get a chance,
yeah.
If you get a chance, go listen to that. The kids are extremely intelligent and very sort of insightful. But what I took away from that week as well was that the kids are very aware, that they're very aware of like what's going on in the world, about the sort of really depressed and down ethos that exists in the United States right now, of people being very sort of anxious and worried and stressed and sort of fatalistic and not very optimistic about what the world's going to be, pessimistic. The kids are taking on all that pessimism themselves as well. Now, it's one thing for somebody like Mike and I to be pessimistic about the future. We've lived for almost 40 years on this earth. We got a chance to have a childhood that was sort of free of that pessimism. And I'm starting to wonder, what is that pessimism doing to them in their young years, in their teenage years? Like, what does it mean that they grow up and don't have a ton of hope for what the future will look like? It worries me quite a bit. And so today is Father's Day, and we're thinking about like, hey, what does it mean to be a good parent and a good father? I'm not a parent. I will never have to parent anyone. I'm very happy about that. But I am thinking about like, what kind of impact will I have on Mike's son and that sort of thing. And I hope it's an impact that gives them some, the kids, whether they be the students I teach or, you know, young people in my own family, a little bit of optimism about what the future can be. And I mean that in my own actions, and I mean that in my words, and I mean that in all those sorts of things. But I hope that they're getting a sense, because right now they don't have it. I'm just going to say that as a blanket statement. I don't think the kids are too optimistic. And I hope that we can sort of start turning that around for them and make things more optimistic about their future. And that comes down to like every decision that we're going to make between now and forever. So in what ways are you encouraging your young people in your life to be optimistic about the future? And in what way are you creating a world they can be optimistic about, honestly? And so I'm thinking about that every single day. And I hope that that's something that we can continue to do, even though I'm not a father. I'm still doing my best to make things optimistic for a world that Mike's son will have to grow up in.
Appreciate it. Thank you for doing that.
That's all we have for you this week. We will be back midweek with our midweek episode for paid subscribers. I can't say that. Paid Substack subscribers. Substack subscribers. We'll be back midweek to talk to those people. We might have a little bit of a surprise for you next week. We're sort of in talks with somebody about being a special guest on the show. We'll see. But we'll be back next week on Monday for everybody. Thanks for joining us here on Royals Weekly, presented by Bet Online. We'll see you next week. Until then, be good to each other.
And go Royals.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.